Hi, I'm Alston. I teach at the Singapore University of Technology and Design, and my two kind of co-contributors to this presentation are Geraldine, who just started her PhD yesterday at the Lipid Group in Lausanne, and Tanya Lak, who's moved to Japan to do a postdoc at Meiji University by now. But to recognize everyone, so first slide I stole from John, and so climate-based daylighting metrics, I mean, just very, very basic introduction, I mean, everyone here probably knows, but you know, you define some sort of patches or contribution sources on the outside, you use reverse ray tracing through radiance to calculate the contribution of those patches, you register their solid angle as well, and you can calculate the luminance at a point in time by multiplying the contribution times the solid angle times the luminance of each patch if you want. And you can do this on a climatic basis if you just pull in 8,760 values of luminance patches, and you get out an annual luminance calculation. This, with a little bit of work, can be extrapolated to annual luminance renderings as well. So it's always a general kind of question is like, what do we do with these results and how do we parse them is often the bigger problem than deriving them these days. And there's been several approaches to this, useful daylight illuminances, kind of broke it up into four different thresholds, too little, basically supplemental lights, autonomous, you know, electric lights, and exceeded above 3,000 lux, which is supposed to correspond to increased probability of visual discomfort. Christoph Reinhardt and Jan Wienold had a similar kind of conception with daylight availability, where if you have a lux target of 300, then you can say, okay, what's the percentage of hours above that threshold? But then also if you go more than 10 times above that threshold, more than 5% of the hours in the year, then you have an overlit space. So you can look at that in the same visualization in this case. And ASE from the IES LM83 and Lisa Heshong's work is really like a more pure overlighting measure. It's just looking at direct sunlight on a climatic basis. If you have more than 250 hours, then there's a strong likelihood of discomfort in that location. So these are kind of CBDMs interpreted on a frequency basis. And then you can have direct subjective criteria like DGP or enhanced simplified DGP from Jan. Where you can look at the subjective results also using a frequency basis. So Jan kind of borrowed his standards from EN15251, I think. And so the general idea is to maintain comfort for a percentage of hours in the year and rank your building based upon that. And Chevy Rockcastle has also done work with this, with her modified spatial contrast metric, where you look at total global contrast in a space at different spatial thresholds, and you can say whether that corresponds to pleasant or interesting or exciting, and then using the light solve method, she can interpolate that throughout the year, and you get a sense of when a space might be calming or exciting. So I'm completely on board with all of these measures. I think they're, you know, it's of course very important to know how often something occurs in your building or in your design. But then there's also another kind of type of way, if you want, of looking at these things where you try to directly relate, say, climate-based analyses to what I would say is like a kind of global or overall subjectivity of the space rather than an instantaneous one. So Reinhardt, Weissman, and Raka came up with this thing in 2011 and 2014 called the Daylight Area based on surveys. Students drew lines about where they felt was daylight, and it turns out, just luckily, that these correspond daylight areas to DA 300 lux 50%, which is partially where the LM83 standard came from, and then partial daylight is DA 150 lux 50% of the hours in the year. So this is what I would call like a direct subjective interpretation of a climate-based daylighting metric. And I did some work on this back during my thesis at MIT, which we published in 2013 and 2015, where we were looking at combined annual discomfort indices, so looking at DGP, direct sunlight on the eye or the desk, and also reflectance in the monitor screen, which reduces contrast into the screen image. So the statistics were very, very bad in this paper. Jan knows well. We argued bitterly about it, but the conclusions are not incorrect, and we are not fully incorrect. And we checked this with Kevin Vandenberg's thesis data as well, and it kind of also showed up there. So the goals of this presentation are to search for subjective meaning in CBDMs beyond simply the frequency of occurrences, and also to assess certain like traditional lighting thresholds, 300 lux, 500 lux, and glare metric results in the field, specifically in Singapore, who's funding this work. And so to do this, we have to calculate CBDMs for real spaces using calibrated models and then pair those directly with subjective responses, which is what I'm going to show you how we did. So we visited 10 spaces, or 10 office spaces for this study, large open plan offices in Singapore. This is one of them. For each one, we did a kind of complete 3D scan of the floor and the outside environment. We built a 3D model, including desks, monitors, and luminaires. And then we also measured, using this Konkaminolta spectrophotometer, the color and reflectance properties of all of the materials and the glazing, not using the spectrophotometer, but using an illuminance sensor if we couldn't get the data. So we're able to build a relatively detailed 3D model for each of these buildings with measured material properties. And then we did a survey in each of them. A total of 543 people participated. And for each person, we took an HDR measurement, vertical eye illuminance before and after the HDR, horizontal desktop illuminance, and luminance of a gray card for the calibration of the HDR photographs. These were done immediately after they finished the survey, so there's a slight time delay there. The survey takes 5 minutes, and the measurements take about 90 seconds or so, so it's not a huge delay. And then there's the whole troublesome thing of calibration. So normally calibration of a lighting model is kind of okay because you have like an empty space with the lights off. We couldn't turn the lights off in these buildings because people were working in them while we did the survey. So there's always electric lighting and daylighting, which is really unfortunate. but so we grabbed IES profiles that were similar to what we observed in our HDR photographic captures. And then we plugged them in using IES to RAD, and then kind of just adjusted the scaling and adjusted the distribution if we needed to until we got something that matched pretty well. Usually these were in dark areas. And for the actual climate-based daylight modeling, we generated in a 5-minute weather file split using Jim Reindl from the weather station on the top of our university. There's a little pyranometer. It's not a very good pyranometer, but it works okay. So we have the weather station through Jim Reindl generating a 5-minute weather data. We have our detailed model. We use DaySim to generate 5-minute illuminance files for each participant, and we use Radiance to simulate just the electric lighting illuminance. So we have kind of comprehensive-ish CBDM data for the desktop, the eye, and the monitor screen. And so for each of these, then, we can compare the combination of the daylighting and electric lighting, this is a plot for one building, against our measured illuminance values. And what's nice about these plots is you can check where if there's strong bias in the model. You can also check for individual desks where problems might be. And we can zero in on these and adjust or see where there might be problems. So things that happen, windows are missing, a luminaire is missing, or a luminaire is where it shouldn't be, computer screen is misoriented, things like that kind of thing. So for this validation, we're pulling out one single value from our 5-minute illuminance file that corresponds to when the survey measurements were taken, and then the electric lighting, none of these had dimming controls, so they're all just, just take the electric lighting value. So overall, for our 543 measurements, the scatter plot looks like this, measured on the X, simulated on the Y. And this was okay. The RMSE is about 26% of the mean, which is not as good as you would want it ideally. I was really hoping to get below 20, but there's lots of reasons why this occurred. Some of the buildings are somewhat far from the weather station, so the weather might be a little incorrect or offset. Shading materials are really hard to measure in the field, it turns out. Screen luminances and content change quite a bit. Some people turn their screens off before we measure. Some people have really bright screens or dark screens. And then there's all this like stuff that people put into buildings, which really messes with your models, because it's really hard to model all that stuff, and there's a lot of stuff like they put in their buildings. So desk clutter and plants and posters, all sorts of things. But in the end, we had 10 models for these 543 people. What you're looking at is the mean illuminance for each model. So you get a sense that they're very different spatially, and they're very different in terms of daylighting properties. This was a really nice building with 12% TVIS, glazing transmittance, and deep overhangs. So there's like almost no daylight in this office. Anyways, and we have measurements, HDR and illuminance for each person that we surveyed in each of these. These are just sample images from the 10 buildings. And so now the thing is we have to analyze this data, and I wanted to be a little straightforward about how I did this. So what we do is we take our data and we group it through like a quantile cut of a predictor variable. So what we're looking at here is a box plot of a cut based on the average annual horizontal illuminance predicted by our climate-based model, which is DASIM in this case. And you see that we get like mean values for each group of people, and the range starts to increase a bit as you get towards the upper illuminance thresholds. There are always 23 groups, and we just base that, we take the square root of the sample size of around 23 groups of 23 or 24 people in each group. And that's just so we don't decide that directly, because if you choose your group size based on your correlations, then you're in trouble. So we just de facto chose to do this in a kind of a way that we don't look at any of the correlations before we make the grouping. And then you correlate it against some statistical representation of what happens in that group. It could be the number of people who are happy, the number of people who are ticked off at the lighting. In this case, I'm correlating against the mean DA300 lux value, so I'm correlating simulation to a simulation, so you'd expect there to be a large correlation, but this is just an example. You can run regression models, linear regression, spline regression, whatever. And in this case, we're plotting the best fit linear regression line here, even though this is a nonlinear correlation. And we can see the R-squared is about 73%. It's got a low p-value and it's a strong effect size. So this is just an example of the way we're analyzing this data that we've collected. So what came out of this? Probably a reasonable question. So this is looking at one specific question we asked. How satisfied are you with your access to daylight? So it's a very direct question in a way, and for anyone who answered that they were at least a little bit satisfied, we ranked the percentage of people who answered that they were at least a little bit satisfied against average DA300 lux values. And so what you see is that especially at DA300 lux values above 20%, there's a very strong correlation. Things are grouped, the points are, the groupings are along the line, the regression line here. But what you see is like down here around the 0% threshold, there's like a large variance. So basically what it means is that people are still kind of satisfied with lighting levels that are below 300 lux in our study. And we did this again with UDI supplemental plus autonomous. So this is again 100 to 3000 lux, and specifically for these Singaporean offices in this climatic context. And you see it gets better, the R-squared improves, still a moderate effect size, which is actually quite good. but there's still this kind of range here towards the bottom. I probably should have made this encompass that as well. So in the end, we just very directly said, okay, well, what if we just take the mean horizontal daylight illuminance versus people who are satisfied with access to daylight? And that's a very good correlation. The R-squared is about 80%. Which is a strong effect size. This is the log 10 of the mean illuminance, by the way. The correlation doesn't look quite as good when you just use the straight illuminance. But what's interesting is that even at levels of like say 10 lux average illuminance, more than 25% of people are satisfied. And so if you look at these numbers, where's this? Oh, sorry. All right, I'll come to them in a second. We can, you know, we can just derive a very straightforward equation to represent this. And the inverse is basically also true. So if you look at people who are dissatisfied with their access to light, it's a pretty strong correlation as well. It's the same data. And so we can look at this more spatially. This is one of our buildings, really fancy, like 70% wind to wall ratio building in one of the business districts of Singapore. This is the current Singaporean lighting standard, which is 500 lux more than 50% of the time. And so you see that like very little of this building is actually daylit. It's like 23% daylit. But if we look at the percentage of people satisfied, we would estimate about 70% of the occupants are kind of happy with the lighting levels there, which corresponds to the actual survey data, of course. And then this is just the average daytime illuminance plot at the end. So it's interesting because at 80 lux average daytime illuminance, we can say that about 50% of Singaporeans will be satisfied with that daylight access. But if we want 75% of them to be satisfied, we need to increase it all the way to almost 1,800 lux, which is potentially problematic and probably enters you into the range of glare probability. But at least it could set something like a kind of minimum that you would want to achieve to make sure that, you know, your buildings aren't just like dark, miserable places. And then if we want to look at discomfort assessments, things become quite a bit harder. Really much harder. So this is a question, and you'll see there are problems with this, but for the length of time you've been using this workspace, how do the combined lighting conditions from daylight and electric light make you feel? And anyone who answers that they're at least a little bit uncomfortable gets counted in this percentage here. So you'll notice one, not a whole lot of people are saying they're uncomfortable overall. So we related to UDI exceeded over 3,000 lux, and there's no correlation there. And there's very few people who actually experience a lot of UDIE, only about 4.4% of our population in the study do. We can look at it against just the mean values for horizontal or vertical, by the way, they both don't correlate very well. So here you see the R-squared is 2%, and the p-value is 23%, so that's very bad. We also ran these the instantaneous comfort against glare metrics like DGP, VCP, et cetera. Doesn't help very much. So we went to the source of what people are complaining about. Number one, reflections in the monitor screen. Number two, electric lighting. Number three, luminances of the window. Number four, the ever mysterious other, which we have written data for. Shading device, reflections, and desk lamps. If it's a desk lamp, why don't you just turn it off? But and so, if just looking at electric lighting, like our measured VCP values, which is visual comfort probability, which is designed for ceiling horizontal luminaires, which are in all of our buildings actually, except for one, there's not much below the 90% comfort probability. So, it's hard to directly use the metrics in Singapore, at least at this time. And just an anecdote here, rather than analysis, this is from one specific building, the one that has very poor daylighting levels. There's certain problems that people complain about that a simulation wouldn't catch necessarily. So in this case, we have an exposed lamp. It's about almost 12,000 candela per meter squared, which people really don't like. But if you use an IES file to simulate that, you know, it's a little smoothed out, you wouldn't necessarily see that as easily. And then there's a light post out here, which I would never model, that has fritted or like kind of diffusing glass on it, and about 1 to 2 hours a day, the sun hits that and it just gets reflected into the building with like really bright luminance levels. And so simulation could never catch that. Well, maybe with the photon map and really good modeling, but it still would be tough. So this is kind of like, we don't have a solution for this in Singapore yet, and there's some future work that will happen with regards to that. And then finally, like one other thing I looked at with this was what lighting criteria we should design for in the tropics. So in Singapore, it's 500 lux And I don't really like that, and I have trouble convincing the people who fund this project, who are also the ones who write the standards, to switch. So this is just a little bit of analysis here. So what we're looking at here is a smooth density plot of our responses based upon measured values. And the question is, would you want to increase the electric lighting levels, maintain them, or decrease them in order to improve your comfort or satisfaction with the space? And so what we see is, unless we go up to 800 or 900 lux over here, the maximum area where people want to maintain the lighting levels is around 385 lux. And if you want, for some reason, there's a peak of people who want to lower the electric lighting at 300 lux. I think this is because 300 lux, the building with more like 300 lux lighting design was a green building, and so they might have been a little biased there. But anyways. And at 500 lux, you see there's an increase of people who want to lower their lighting levels. So this is a point-in-time measurement argument for less than 500 lux. And this is a climate-based daylighting plus electric lighting simulation argument for not 500 lux. So these are two analysis plots. Red is people who said lighting is often too high. Blue is people who said lighting is often too low. There's actually a decent moderate effect size correlation with predicted lighting too low. Not so much with predicted lighting too high, but what you notice is there's this very strong cluster of people around the upper areas of 500 lux and the all the way up to 600, 700 lux that say that this lighting is too high. So there's an argument to not go with 500 lux lighting. But really what it comes down to is that what we're looking at here is a measurement on the left and a measurement on the right. This one's 300 lux, this one's 500 lux, vertical eye luminance in this case. From the luminance false color plots, we can see a strong difference. From the Picon H visualizations, not so much. 5 minutes, it's way different than my timer. And so really people can't tell the difference so easily. And that's not very surprising. So you might as well choose 300 lux is my argument. They don't believe me, though. All right, so in conclusion, CBDMs do relate to how occupants feel about real daylight spaces, but lower levels, say, for example, under 100 lux, of supplemental light exposure are kind of underrepresented in our current CBDMs if we want to apply them for this purpose. So we created this new measure, satisfaction with access to daylight. It definitely works in Singapore. visual discomfort is really difficult to predict properly in the field, at least if you want to relate that to subjective data. And there's decent, but not perfect, evidence to support a 300 lux lighting design criteria, both based on instantaneous and climate-based analysis of these spaces. In the future, we're going to run annual luminance-based discomfort metrics for all 543 spaces. That actually won't take very long, only about 10 days or so, but I had to use my computer for something else, so I didn't get it done before this. We're going to recreate the study for 80 people in a lab setting, which should be interesting as a comparison. And we're going to look at multivariate analysis for the discomfort based on the criteria that people reported in the survey. So thank you. Oh yeah, this was funded by all of these people.
It's a fascinating study. Besides the 500 lux criteria being too high, what was your overall impression of main causes of dissatisfaction in people's work environments?
These are all open offices, so a fair amount of people were kind of dissatisfied with not being able to adjust their own lighting levels. There was one office where they could, and they seemed to have reasonably higher satisfaction there. But then there were a lot of funny things, like people complained about windows where the luminance was 200 candela per meter squared being too bright, and so then there's a certain extra sensitivity to contrast or brightness in Singapore. And for that person, I was like, your monitor is brighter than the window, and he was like, well, yeah, but the window bothers me, so okay.
The mean annual value looked promising. Did you also look at the median annual value?
Did not, but I could easily generate that.
It just might be interesting to see if it goes. And another question on the reflections from the monitor. Is it possible to disaggregate those reflections as from windows or from electric lighting?
Yeah, so that's a very good question. We have a generic monitor model we applied to everything because we didn't want to build 543 monitor models. It's a reasonable model in that it has a glow surface behind and a trans material with specular and diffuse properties in front of that. I have an idea for how we could try to look at this over the whole year, and I want to implement it. It's going to be a bit more involved.
I think more of the questionnaire responses. Hmm?
Those were from questionnaire responses, yes. So that it's very difficult to identify. I tried to do that with when I was looking at Kevin Vandenbroek-Mellenberg's thesis data, and it was like almost impossible from the HDR images because the luminance accuracy is not so perfect from capture to capture. But for simulations, it actually, ironically, might be easier to determine.
Yes. I was just wondering, people who had very low luminance values at their desk, but were still satisfied, did you look at whether they maybe had like a significant view outside or how views sort of correlated with their satisfaction?
I didn't look at that, but in most cases, they wouldn't have a significant view outside if they only have 0 or 1 lux on average. I did, there is a
far
view.
Away and still
yeah.
Just have capture interest.
Fair, but I'm pretty certain you'd at least have some value greater than 1, even at that point, maybe even as much as like 40 or 50 from daylight. But we did ask a question about view, which is not shown here, but view does tend to correlate with average vertical illuminance, like the satisfaction with view and vertical illuminance is a pretty strong correlation. But I wanted to do something more with like the solid angles of the windows that people see for that analysis, so it's a kind of wish list for me. David?
You said you want to go on with that study in the lab. Are you planning to do performance tests there as well, to not only see how the subjective rating is, but also how the performance is? Because moving from 500 to 300 lux, for example, might affect that, even though people say they are fine with that, and they can't tell the difference.
Yeah. So what happened is we randomly got asked to do a study on very short notice in the Skylab, which is a copy of the LBNL Flex Lab in Singapore. And so I have almost zero time, starting next week on Monday, so I have like zero time. I won't even be there for the start of it, but we're not going to do performance testing, but we are going to use the precise methods of survey and data collection that we used in the field, in the lab, and try to garner some comparison between them. I don't know if this will work well or not, but we'll see. Yeah?
Yeah, just shortly to the performance test, I see also a problem if you do a performance test in the lab for a short time, because typically you restrict your experiments to, I don't know, half an hour or an hour.
Mm.
You will not see anything because people in the lab, they are always trying to perform well. So even they are getting more tired, the light level is lower, you will not see it in the results. But what I wanted to emphasize what you said is that there is a big influence of how the general satisfaction of the people is regarding other evaluations. So for example, if they are really annoyed by noise, I don't know if you asked these
yeah.
other questions.
Didn't, but yeah.
If they are annoyed by noise, then they report much more glare and all the other things, or they feel overheating much earlier and so on. It's really difficult to extract them reliably. If they are really annoyed by glare, even if you ask that.
Yeah.
So we have that also in our field studies, but we haven't. Mm-hmm. That's one of the reasons why I typically prefer doing the studies in the lab, where you have the things more under control.
Yeah, I have conflicted feelings about both, actually, but I agree with you that other environmental criteria could make a big difference, but I also am a little wary of trying to control for lots of other variables, because then you end up with, you know, greater potential for false conclusions once you add more measurements into your statistical analyses. But it is definitely a concern that's not so easy to deal with.
Ruth.
Yeah. I was just wondering if you could go back to maybe something geographical location, like that it's an equatorial area, and what the influence of that climate is on people's relationship with sunlight and luminance.
Yeah, well, I mean, I guess that's implicitly in the study because they're all in Singapore and all the models are climate based, which we used with custom weather data from Singapore. But I think that to answer your question a little differently, if we were to run this study in New York or Freiburg or anywhere else, we'd probably get different correlations. But I unfortunately don't have access to data like that right now. Thank you.
Well, plenty of time. Thank you.
Okay, so
uh,
25.